Coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas, and recorded live, Science News is on the air right now.
This is The Promise of Tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of The Promise of Tomorrow.
Yes, it's so good to be with you again as we explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation. In the first half hour, we're going to meet Dennis Treese. He's in charge of security for Logan International Airport and some other properties run by the Massachusetts Port Authority. Security Magazine named him the top security director for all the United States airports and seaports in 2009. So he really knows his stuff, and you're going to enjoy very much meeting Dennis Treese. And in the second half hour, Jürgen Hoffler is back with us again from Nanosys. Remember, we broke the story last week. If you tuned in, you heard that we broke the story that batteries are going to increase in capacity by 40%. Sometime the announcement is going to be made in the spring. But we got the story here last week from Jürgen Hoffler, and he's going to come back in the second half hour and bring us up to date on where that is going. And, of course, we'll visit the Den of Strangers, get more wisdom from somebody a lot of us never heard of, visit our fountain of useless information we have here on the set in the second half of the program. And, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. People often tell us that that's their favorite part of the whole show. And today's guest, we're going to get to in a minute, but right now we need to step into our world newsroom here in the Science News Radio Network and hear from our correspondents around the world on some of the things that we think we need to know about. So let's do that right now. Well, to start out, here's a reminder. The IEEE Energy Conference begins today in Boston. Lots of excitement and new energy solutions, so you still have time to attend. More info at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz, and see the link on the right side of your screen. The most interesting exhibits are today and tomorrow, then the last day is Wednesday. Just in time to head south for the U.S.-Mexico Border Energy Forum 17 in Chihuahua, Mexico, Thursday and Friday. I know you're going to want to attend that. I'm serious. It's probably going to be extremely interesting. What are we doing with Mexico in partnership with energy? Well, you know, we understand the ability of phase change materials to readily and swiftly transition between the different phases, and it has made them valuable as a low power source of non-volatile or flash memory and data storage. Nanotechwire.com is reporting that now an entire new class of phase change materials have been discovered by researchers with the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory in the University of California, Berkeley, that could be applied to phase change random access memory technologies and possibly optical data storage as well. The new phase change materials, nanocrystal alloys of a metal and semiconductor. They're called BEANS, B-E-A-N-S, and that stands for Binary Eutectic Alloy Nanostructures. And here's a story out of Rice University. They're reporting that they've built an antenna that captures light in the same way that an antenna, as we know it, captures radio waves or television signals. And they do it at a small scale that has big potential, according to Rice. Condensed matter physicist Doug Nadelson and graduate student Dan Ward have found a way to make an optical antenna from two gold tips separated by a nanoscale gap that gathers light from a laser. The tips grab the light and concentrate it down to a tiny space. Nadelson said that leads to a thousandfold increase in light intensity in the gap. Nadelson said getting an accurate measurement of the effect is a first. But I know what you're thinking. What use is it? Well, I knew you'd ask that question. Now, he expects the discovery will be useful in the development of tools for optics and for chemical and biological sensing, even at the single molecule scale, with implications for industrial safety, defense, and homeland security. Well, here's a report from Andrew Willis of EU Observer and Pete Harrison of Reuters. Apparently, the EU Climate Action Commissioner, Connie Hedegaard, has said that achieving an agreement on reduced CO2 emissions at a United Nations conference later this year is no longer a top EU priority. Well, there's a surprise, because they've really been pushing for it. They say that nobody should expect the EU to sign up to an extension of the Kyoto Protocol unless loopholes are closed and other big players commit. And this is a quote. If we did so, we would take away the pressure to try and bring the United States into a formal arrangement, and we would take away the pressure on emerging economies. Well, there you have it. So says EU Climate Commissioner Connie Hedegaard. And you can read into that what you like. Britain has been particularly pushing for this, and of course we've done numerous studies on this program about the failure of their cap and trade program in Britain and how it's cost the economy a lot of money, and the efforts in past cap and trade in this country seem to be stalled. Today's guest is Dennis Treese. He's Director of Corporate Security for the Massachusetts Port Authority. That's Boston's Logan International Airport, of course, but Massport's two regional airports, the shipping and cruise terminals, and numerous harbor properties of which he's in charge of security. So it's a big job. Dennis spent about $250 million in physical security overhaul since 9/11. And his budget every year is $65 million for security alone there at the Massachusetts Port Authority. And before we get to Dennis, I want to point out an article by Fareed Zachariah. He writes for Newsweek magazine. And Zachariah says that 9 years after 9/11, could anyone doubt that Al-Qaeda is simply not that deadly a threat? Well, you know, we ask that question all the time. He says, once governments everywhere began serious countermeasures, Osama bin Laden's terror network has been unable to launch a single major attack on high-value targets in the United States and Europe. Well, that's, he admits, it's because governments everywhere began serious countermeasures and security. So he says he doesn't minimize Al-Qaeda's intentions, but he points out the report in the Washington Post, Top Secret America, they called it, Dana Priest and William Arkin spent 2 years gathering information on how 9/11 has really changed America. And some of the highlights of that, since September 11, 2001, the U.S. government has created or reconfigured at least 263 organizations to tackle some aspect of the war on terror. And the amount of money spent on intelligence has risen by 250% to $75 billion. Now, that's the public number. And Zachariah says that's a gross underestimate. This is more than the rest of the world spends on terror security put together. And some 30,000 people are now employed in the United States exclusively to listen in on phone conversations and other communications in the United States. Well, person who's not spent one dime of public money, all spent by the Massachusetts Port Authority's own budget, is Dennis Treese. And I want to introduce you to him. Well, of course, this is a science program, and we like to talk about technology, and the technology in homeland security is of vital interest, of course. So right now I want to introduce you to Dennis Treese, a highly decorated retired colonel after 30 years with the Army, serving all over the world in intelligence, one time as CIA coordinating joint operations with the CIA and the Pentagon. It was only a year after 9/11 that the Massachusetts Port Authority, among our most sensitive entry point, snag Dennis to be the director of corporate security, a huge responsibility. And in 2009, Security Magazine named Colonel Treese the top security director for all the U.S. airports and seaports. And we're going to want to ask him about that in just a little bit. But right now, welcome to the program, Dennis.
Well, thank you very much, Colonel.
Massachusetts Port Authority, you have jurisdiction over both sea and air commerce, I understand, the Boston Logan International Airport, Massport's two regional airports, the shipping and cruise terminals. What about rail and trucking?
No, we have no responsibilities for rail or trucking.
Okay, well, let me ask you then about the budget. You've got a $65 million annual security funding, and I presume that a slug of that comes from the federal government, but is also the state and the city or the county provide some of that funding too?
No, actually, Massport receives no tax money at all. We're a self-supporting, wholly owned corporation of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. We're a profitable corporation, and all of the money in our security budget is our own.
So it is paid out of airport fees, then I guess, from the airlines and that sort of thing, or where does it come from?
Exactly right. Well, if you've ever parked at Logan Airport, you'll know where most of our revenue comes from.
All right. Well, that makes a lot of sense. Now, I understand there's been $250 billion on security overhaul since you came aboard. Tell us, what are some of the improvements since 9/11?
Well, you'll notice them immediately when you drive up to the terminals. We have bollards there, those vertical posts that mm-hmm. prevent automobiles from driving into the terminals.
Sure.
That keeps the terrorists out. It also keeps people who are just inattentive and their brake pedal slips and whatnot. So it's a safety and a security feature. All of the glass in all of our terminals and buildings is shatterproof, so that if there is, God forbid, any problem, there won't be any flying glass. We've turned our chain link fences around the airport from the standard airport chain link fence with barbed wire on top to 10-foot crash-resistant concrete walls. And we've installed cameras, special cameras, day-night cameras, on the beach around Logan Airport. We put buoys out at the 250-foot shore marker around the airport. The legislature gave us a special security zone around the airport. We have special wedge barriers at the two vehicle gates that allow delivery vehicles and construction and aviation vehicles, et cetera, into the airport. Those things were $2.5 million apiece at each end of the airport. So we did an awful lot to take care of what we sort of saw as the low-hanging fruit in terms of the physical security of the airport. We also doubled the size of Troop F of the Massachusetts State Police, which is directly responsive and responsible for the safety and security of all Massport properties.
Okay, so the state police are the ones who have the authority then, the jurisdiction, to arrest and restrain at the airport. And I guess now then, the next time we use the airport and pay the fees, we can feel that the fees are really going for something very important, the safety of everybody who's using the airport and who's using all the port facilities that you administer.
Right, exactly. But I should also tell you that we can't sell stock because that's ownership. So mm-hmm. we go to the bond market to raise money to pay for our capital programs, and that was the money that paid for all of those major improvements that I noted, except for the state police. They're not out of the capital budget. They come out of the fees and et cetera.
All right. Well, that's good. Now, you're also, you serve as director of the Massport Transportation Security Center of Excellence, and I want you to explain to us what that's about. But I understand that you're helping vendors and inventors and people like that for bringing promising new security technologies. What are some of the stuff that you've gotten from that?
Well, we've learned a lot. I mean, for example, right after 9/11, every vendor and inventor in the country who had a solution for what they thought were our problems parachuted in here one night and started installing all kinds of gee whiz things. And you know what? Some of them didn't quite work in an airport environment. And so we put together a structured program to actually test promising security technologies so that we get to look at them and we get to understand them before we even attempt that. I give you one example of something that was kind of interesting and never even got to an installation phase. I was called one day by a guy who had invented a new biometric device, and he thought we could use it to, you know, for people, employees, to gain access to the secure parts of the airport. Mm-hmm. And it was based on musical notes. And he said, everybody's brain is wired completely differently, so I'll give you five random notes and ask you to complete that with five notes of your own, and no two people will do the same five notes.
Okay.
And so I listened to him politely, and then I said, well, what about our employees who have hearing problems and the Americans with Disabilities Act and little things like that?
Sure.
And, you know, he hadn't even considered that that was, you know, a part of, you know, the problems that, you know, we face in running a modern airport. So, you know, small conversations with folks don't cost anything, and help them, you know, go out and design something that actually might work better in a commercial environment. So one very exciting thing that we've got in the Center of Excellence right now is a new type of camera technology that is so cool that the Secretary of Homeland Security came to see it. The new head of the TSA has come to see it.
Oh, yeah?
It's absolutely game-changing
in terms of
video surveillance. And it's being developed at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and it's being funded by the Department of Homeland Security. And it's really quite a camera array.
Are you going to be able to tell us what it does?
Well, I certainly can. Now, imagine a Super Bowl game.
Uh-huh.
And you're in a dome, and there's a single camera at the top of the dome.
Yeah.
This camera will be able to give you ID quality pictures of everyone's face that is inside that dome.
Wow.
It'll watch the entire game. It'll watch the game setup. It'll watch the game teardown. If somebody says, oh, you know what, my wallet was stolen, or my cooler was stolen, or my backpack was stolen, or whatever, okay, what seat were you in? And we can watch that seat for the entire game, and we can find who lifted the item, and then get a good quality photograph of them and send that to the police. You can watch how the vendors distribute their wares. And so, you know, it doesn't serve just security purposes. It serves many masters. The people who put the field together, did they do it efficiently, et cetera. So all kinds of folks with a vested interest in knowing what happened before, during, and after the game can watch this video, which is, it just doesn't miss anything. I mean, I call it this and that photography, whereas today, when you have cameras, you make choices. Okay, I'm going to put a camera here, and I'm going to point it over there. Well, you're also deciding where you're not going to point a camera, right?
Mm-hmm, sure.
Because a camera can't see everything. Well,
yeah.
This camera can see everything, and it sees everything at great detail. So it's groundbreaking, it's game-changing, and but it does come with some interesting challenges, like the one we have in Terminal A right now in the ceiling of the departure hall.
Mm-hmm.
Generates 400 million pixels every second.
Oh.
And so it takes a lot of computing power to deal with that. And it takes a lot of storage, and it takes a lot of network capacity to transmit that, et cetera. So one of the things that they're doing with this test installation in Terminal A is to help solve a lot of the problems that are associated with massive amounts of pixels so that this can become a commercial product, so people like me can buy some of them and put them to use, because right now it's not commercially available.
And it's being developed by MIT, and nobody has it, and it looks like you're going to be the first. Is that right?
Well, we have the only one in existence, and just after the first of the year, we're going to get the upgraded version, which is the final version that they're trying to field, and we're very excited about what that will do. It's more than twice as powerful as the current camera, and so it's just great stuff, and it's going to change the nature of surveillance forever.
Well, then, Dennis, as you mentioned, it's going to have all this storage, and I imagine there's going to be a limit then to how long you're going to be able to keep the information. I mean, you're going to have to decide sometime whether you're going to keep it 24 hours or 48 hours or 5 months or whatever. And then the other question is that what about the cataloging? I mean, you're going to be able to search then by timeline and area, I suppose, to take you right to where you want to be at a certain time or spot.
Well, this thing gives you 360-degree view. So, but all you have to do is click on any part of the... I mean, you see the fisheye view. Mm-hmm. Click on any part of that fisheye, and it'll give you the expanded flat version of that. And then if you put... you can use intelligent software. We call it video analytics. And, for example, if I wanted to know how many people came out of an escalator on the... west end of Terminal A in any given day, I can just draw a little red box around that, and it will just, you know, silently note everybody who comes out of that elevator or down the escalator, and I can then compress all of those so that I can watch them all one right after the other. So I don't have to watch 24 hours of tape. I can just watch the people coming down the elevator or coming out of the elevator or down the escalator. So it's actually amazing at what this thing will do, and this will help us, for example, understand for maintenance purposes how often we need to have the elevator maintained or the escalator based on usage rather than just, say, every 30 days.
And then this can be a commercial item put out by MIT, I would presume, and anybody anywhere can buy it then. I mean,
the way this works is, since the federal government owns it, they have no intellectual property rights.
Oh.
What they do is then they will actually give this to the private sector to develop, and anybody who wants to come forward and develop it, they're able to do it.
So we could see it at the Texas Stadium, we could see it at the Lambert Field in St. Louis, we could see it at any place that there could be a worry about security.
Absolutely correct.
Tell me then, the camera that sees through people's clothing and alerts you to problems of bombs or guns or something else like that, was that developed through this Transportation Security Center of Excellence too?
Well, we've been working with them for years on that. We had one of the early pilots for that. There are two types of technology that do that. One's X-ray and one's millimeter wave. The millimeter wave is the one that looks basically at the infrared spectrum, and the other one is, of course, X-ray. And so the TSA is looking at both, and they're using both around the country, and while we had a hand in a lot of that, we weren't the only people who dealt with the TSA and their labs on this issue.
Well, Dennis, we're going to have to take a break here at the half hour, but when we come back, I'm going to want to revisit this question about these cameras. I can remember when we first announced that these cameras were coming a few years ago, there was a lot of questions about, you know, would the American public really stand for having cameras that can see through their clothing before they board airplanes? And the thought was that, no, it'll never happen. These cameras will never get in. Didn't bother me any. I mean, I like the increased security, but then again, I don't have much to look at anyway. But as it is, I really want to know. And now I got the guy on the phone that I can ask about, who had to put these things in and had to answer to the press and answer to the people and all the queries about these cameras that virtually strip searched you before you got on an airplane. So when we come back, I'm going to want to know more about that. So stay with us and we'll be right back. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind Whom in the den of strangers will we meet today?
Alexander Solzhenitsyn. The line separating good and evil passes not through states, nor between political parties either, but right through every human heart.